Two humorous nurses would like to acknowledge the true custodians of the land in which we record our podcast, the Yorta Yorta people.
We pay our respects to elders past and present and extend our respects to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islanders listening today. Always was, always will be Aboriginal land.
Two humorous nurses with Kelly and Alicia.
The podcast that's more humorous than your olecranon.
Your olecranon. Welcome to Two Humorous Nurses, where we plan to bring you funny, informal, conversational chat about all things nursing.
Have you ever wondered, why does the body have parts that we can live without? But sometimes they malfunction and cause you a lot of trouble. Can you tell Kelly wrote this? Us too! Today we're going to discuss a few useless body parts.
Can you tell Kelly wrote this? I write all of them. Anyway, I learnt a new word while I was writing this
today.
Vestigial.
Vestigial.
Vestigial is defined as a degenerate, rudimentary, or atrophied. Do not say that's me. Having become functionless in the course of evolution.
The degenerate, functionless.
Anyway, we live with essential organs like the brain, the heart, and the rectum.
Why wouldn't I?
But why the fuck do we have vestigial organs?
I've decided tonsils. I've decided after doing all this. Actually, I'm going to say it in summary at the end.
Okay.
When I tell you what I've decided.
At the end. All right. What have you decided? Are we going one for one here?
Yeah.
Right. You go first.
I'll go first. So I'm doing the tonsils first. And it's quite personal to me since I no longer have mine.
Oh, I have mine because mine are perfect. Are not vestigial.
So I knew nothing about tonsils. Nothing. I had mine out when I was a nursing student, so knew nothing. They're lymphoid tissue.
Yes.
Did not know this.
Useless things are lymphoid tissue.
Have you learned this today?
Yes.
Situated near the entrance of the digestive and respiratory tracts, which I'm like,
in
oh my
the back
God,
of your throat.
It can do two things.
They actually do play
a key role in our immune system, which I did not know.
As does mine.
Oh my God. So they're a frontline defense against inhaled or ingested pathogens. I'm like, why did I want them cut out? Oh, that's right, because the fuckers wouldn't stop getting infected.
You must have inhaled a lot of
pathogen
shit.
I don't know. For me, it was like a stress response. I'd get sick and then boom, tonsillitis. Yeah,
some people are like that.
Yeah. The basics are that they're, and this is so cool. I find this so fascinating now. I'm like, well, I never wanted them. I never want them. I want them back now. Their mucosa has cells that capture antigens and then produce T and B cells in the tonsil and trigger an immune response. Isn't that incredible?
Yeah.
Yours does the same thing? Fuck. And they monitor intestinal bacteria populations and prevent the overgrowth of intestinal bacteria. What are you talking about that's the same as yours?
The appendix.
Oh, my gosh. Actually, I was reading stuff about that too, but anyway. So I was like, well, how do they form? Like, when, you know, so they appear around the fourth or fifth month of gestation and then they continue to develop with the growth of the child. They're present at birth and they tend to reach the full size between the sixth and eighth years of life, which is interesting because around the eighth, ninth year of life, they are the most active. So maybe that's when the kids are the most disgusting.
No. Nothing can be
Ollie can't get her
toddler.
Finger out of her nose at the moment. Probably the same finger that scratches her bum hole. And I found the funniest thing. It's like a history of tonsillectomy. Two millennia of trauma, hemorrhage, and controversy. It's like an actual publication. I wanted to look at when was tonsillectomy first done and how did they do it basically. And I found some really, really cool facts.
Did you ever do tonsillectomies in theatre?
Yeah.
Yeah. They're like.
But I mean, you can't fucking see anything.
Oh. Why can't you see anything?
Well, there's just no room.
Oh, well, I used to assist.
Table. I mean, I did anaesthetic, so.
Well, it's pretty brutal. Like, we could do a tonsillectomy in about 8 minutes.
Mm.
And it's like. Brutal, and depending on how big they were, it was like
nasty.
Yeah,
well, wait till you hear how they used to do them.
Oh, I could only imagine.
So tonsillectomies have been performed for thousands of years. They used to mostly do partial tonsillectomies. But the first mention of tonsillectomy refers to Hindu medicine about 1,000 years BC, which to me is just crazy. In West Review of the History of Medicine, there's the following reference. So this is written by like a surgeon from Hindu medicine, right? When the phlegm and blood are deranged in the soft palate and tonsils, they become large and like a full bladder, accompanied with thirst, cough, and difficulty in breathing. When troublesome, they are to be seized between the blades of a forceps drawn forward and with a semicircular knife, the third of the swelled part is removed. If all be removed, so much blood may be discharged as will destroy the individual. If too little is removed, it will produce an increase in the swelling with fainting and swimming of head. And then,
to be honest, I don't really think much has changed.
So not much has changed.
Grab it in forceps and cut the fucker off.
Wait till you hear this next one.
We do control the bleeding.
This next one is so weird. It's like, this is AD 625 to 690 AD. Paulus Aegineta describes clearly and precisely a method of complete tonsillectomy. He wrote, seating the person in the light of the sun and directing him to open his mouth while one assistant holds his hand and another presses down on the tongue with a wooden spatula. We take a hook and perforate the tonsil with it and drag it outwards as much as we can without drawing its membranes along with it, and then we cut it out by the root with a scalpel. After ligation, the patient must gargle with cold water or oxycrate, which is a mixture of water and vinegar. I had to Google that. Or if hemorrhage occurs, he may use a tepid decoction of brambles, roses, or myrtle leaves. out of touch. But it became more, the tonsillectomy became more routine in Australia in 1910 after ligation and good management of intraop bleeds were introduced.
Yeah.
But now they finally like looked at, well, what actually happens to people who have their tonsils removed? Like, were they actually providing like this
ideal
this
care.
Defense, yeah. right? No, like, yeah, like was there, was, because their tonsils are so active between the ages of 8 and 9, but that's like usually kids get them cut out even earlier than that. And for the first time, the University of Melbourne have examined the long-term effects of removing tonsils and adenoids in childhood, and they're finding that the operations are associated with increased respiratory, infectious and allergic diseases. And I think it was something like kids who so tonsillectomy was found to be associated with an almost tripled relative risk, the risk for those who had the operation compared to those who didn't, for diseases of the upper respiratory tract. These included asthma, influenza, pneumonia and chronic obstructive pulmonary disorder or COPD, the umbrella term for diseases like chronic bronchitis and emphysema. So basically, have them removed and you are three times more likely to get unwell with all of these potentially chronic lung diseases. Conditions. Isn't that so bizarre?
Well,
I mean,
not really.
So the tonsils
understand they play a bit of a
but they
role.
Do
you
play
can
a role.
Just literally live without them, but they just cause you a heap of shit.
But there's also they've shown that sinusitis is more prevalent, and that makes sense because since I had my tonsils out, I get sinusitis every year, like maybe two or three times a year I get it. And then I think, what would I rather, sinusitis or tonsillitis?
Sinusitis.
Sure.
Yeah, exactly.
1,000%. Because I'm like, oh, if I had my time again, would I not get them removed? But I definitely
because it's debilitating.
It was, yeah, and you can't work. I can work
and
with sinusitis.
And then you end up, when you're older, you end up with, you don't necessarily get tonsillitis. You get like, what do they call that thing where they
tonsil stones.
No, but tonsil stones are disgusting.
Yeah, I had them. They're gross.
I've never had any. I don't think I've ever had tonsillitis in my life, to be honest.
I got so sick with tonsillitis that I was hospitalized. I had lymphadenitis. I have my.
That's what I meant. Lymphadenitis.
That was the thing for me. I think I was like 2 months out of getting my tonsillectomy, and I got so sick.
They don't do it as readily now. You have to have had it a certain amount of times per year, and it can't respond to very well to antibiotics.
Which is, I think, now because, it's good because obviously
and I feel
this
like,
research shows that they are providing a function.
Well, surprisingly, almost like the tonsil, I did appendix. And so the appendix is like a finger-like, I wrote finger-like bling. It's not a bling. What was that
it's
meant
like
to
say? It's like a skin tag on the colon.
A finger-like something. What the fuck? Like good work, Kelly.
Appendage.
See, I spent too much time making a reel and not enough time in researching. So the appendix is finger-like.
Bling.
Bling. Blind. Finger-like blind-ended tube.
Yeah.
at found at the end of your cecum.
It's just like
literally
a worm.
At the start of your large colon. Mm. And it's pretty much considered a vestigial organ. However, since the early 2000s, a lot of research has been done around that it might actually be somewhat useful as a reservoir for beneficial gut bacteria.
Mm-hmm.
And
just
I didn't know
in
this.
There, does it?
Yeah, well, it produces it.
Because it is so small.
No, it's actually not. The average appendix is approximately 9 centimetres long.
Nine? I've never seen one that big
ever. It can range from 5 to 35 centimetres long.
I call bullshit.
A diameter of 6 mils. So a diameter of more than 6 mils is considered to be thickened or inflamed. Mm. Originally it was thought the appendix was once used because of our herbivorous ancestors as it aided with the digestion of tough herbivorous food such as tree bark.
So vegans would be all right.
Yeah.
They should hold on to this.
It was much, much larger back then. Obviously, it played a bigger role in digestion. Mm. But over time and as humans evolved, it became redundant as they started to eat more digestible diets. So there are some scientists in the world who actually believe that the appendix will disappear over
not if it's 35 centimetres long.
Yeah. So in the early 2000s, researchers discovered that the appendix has lymphoid cells that can help fight infections because it is actually part of
the lymphatic system.
Yeah, apparently.
And the digestive system.
And it plays a role in the immune system with T lymphocytes and B lymphocytes, which are produced extra thymetically derived. So basically it means anything out of the thymus is usually where your T cells and B cells are produced. So it can be your body can produce them in other locations, and this is one of them. And it produces these cells are the early defences for infection. So we know that gut health is linked with lots of other different things. Like there's all that gut health and psychology thought that brain and gut align together.
Well, they do in your case.
Yeah.
So and mine.
Yeah. but also besides being pretty much not that useful really except for some gut bacteria, appendicitis is like – super common.
Mm.
And if it's not treated, it's obviously can be fatal, can lead to peritonitis, it can burst.
Infertility.
Yeah, lots of different things. So I wanted some facts on like how many cases of appendicitis is there in Australia in any 1 year. But obviously it's not a reportable
And condition. Also the amount of appendixes that you remove that are pearly white.
Correct. So in 2014, 2015, that's the most up-to-date information I could find in my small time of researching this episode. Mm. Anyway, everything led back to this one Australian Commission and Safety and Quality and Health report. So in that year, there were 41,000 hospitalizations for appendicectomies.
Yes,
so removal of the appendix. That's 179 hospitalizations per 100,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
So your chances are pretty high. It's about one in 100, or one in 50 cases. I don't know. My math's not good. but of that, how many were negative appendicitis? Sits at about 20%.
Well, that's not terrible.
No.
Because I know, like, having worked on kids' ward, having worked on surgical ward, and having worked in theatre, you know, you get patients with very convincing symptoms, and particularly when it's women, they're quicker to remove it.
And they often don't do a whole lot of
investigation,
imaging, and things like that, and they don't tend to wait.
No.
To see if it will resolve with antibiotics or things like that. So because obviously the risk factor is you end up taking it and you end up with a perfed one,
which
and is then, far more difficult.
Yeah, and then you deal with sepsis and other potential.
So the risk of appendicitis in women, this is in Australia, according to the New South Wales Emergency Care Institute, is 6.7% in women and 8.3% for men.
And that's true appendicitis.
Yes.
Yeah.
Or the risk of it. So really it's not. I mean, that's pretty common.
Mm.
And, I mean, I think we all know someone who's had appendicitis.
Mm. Or had their appendix out.
Yeah.
Have you got yours?
Yep, I got all my stuff. I am producing T cells and B cells fucking everywhere.
That's the only operation I've really had other than my cysts on my head.
I've only had I produce a child. What's your next one?
My next one is the male nipple.
The male nip.
Yeah.
How fucking useless.
How useless.
Why do we bother?
I mean, yeah, useless. They have nipples because of the way that embryos develop, right?
All the time.
In the initial weeks after gestation, so then fetuses develop the same way until the sex chromosomes are defined, which doesn't happen until week 6 or 7 of pregnancy. So the embryo has already decided that it's going to have nipples no matter what. And then
imagine if the only way you could tell that your child was male or female was when it came out whether it had nipples or not.
That's so weird to think about.
And when we did baby showers, we didn't do pink and blue. We just did nipples and no nipples.
Yes, man, you're fucked. I thought this was interesting. I mean, which it makes sense. Typically, the nipples of both sexes are virtually indistinguishable until puberty.
Yeah.
Which makes sense. Yeah. Like when you see kids running around, like all the nipples look the same. During which time they undergo distinctive changes. Male nipples tend to end up being smaller than female nipples. Yeah. And there's also less variation among male nipples than female nipples. Like because we women,
Their areolas
change and our boobs get – yeah.
Do you know what is considered the perfect size for a nipple in plastic surgery land?
Isn't it like – a 10 cent piece?
It's 42 millimeters. 40. So when we used to do breast.
Oh, that's interesting.
When
that's
we like used to
bigger
do.
Bigger than a 50 cent piece.
When we used to do breast reductions or breast surgeries for like
augmentations and stuff.
More like reshaping of them or whatever. We would put a nipple ring, not a nipple ring, we would put this
cookie cutter
around the nipple so that we knew where to cut to make it smaller because, like, often. After you breastfeed and stuff, your nipples become giants. Mm. But I was watching TV the other day and there was a man with his top off and he had the teeniest tiny nipples. I could not stop staring at him.
Speck nips.
I was like, where is the rest of it?
For around half of men, so this is where their purpose comes in.
Oh, God.
I didn't actually find anything evolutionarily. I don't think men ever breastfed babies, right?
Nah, well, they don't have any. They don't have a huge amount of breast tissue. They don't have the
prolactin hormone and the mammary glands. The mammary glands. They do.
They have some breast tissue, but they don't have all the.
But also, some men can actually lactate.
Oh,
and I mean, we could get into a whole other thing about trans people, but. I'm going to pretend.
Well, men can get breast cancer. So
well, exactly.
You have breast tissue.
That's the thing, they have breast tissue, and some men who get specific types of tumours or who have, I don't know, for whatever reason have problems with their hormones can actually create too much prolactin and then end up lactating. So that is an actual possibility.
Yeah.
I don't know that, though, they can go on meds to, like, induce that and then breastfeed. I can't imagine
they would even have enough to.
No, I don't. Yeah, so I don't believe that can actually happen, but they can actually lactate. But I don't believe there's the whole oxytocin thing.
Yeah,
you know, all that. But for around half of men, the nipples are an important erogenous zone, largely due to the dense nerve supply. So that's literally the only function I could possibly find for
just
a man's
another
nipple.
Sexual function for
so
a man.
It's literally it's said that it can be declared as a secondary sex characteristic, like the Adam's apple, and there was something else. Can't remember. But anyway, the stimulatory response in men and women appears to be unique to the human species and could potentially have evolutionary value in that it contributes to the desire to reproduce. So maybe a million years ago, the way that you told someone that you were ready was just to kind of go up and tweak their nipple a little bit.
Nip creep.
they said the nerve network.
Maybe my husband hasn't evolved that much.
Definitely not. He's still a Neanderthal. The nerve network in the male nipple is much denser than that in the female nipple. That's literally there wasn't a great deal of info because, I mean, nobody gives a fuck.
No one cares about the male nipple.
No one cares about the male nipple.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, we've moved on from like the scientific stuff. Now we're just onto the dumb shit.
Well, pretty much because my the
male nipples and mine is body hair.
Body hair.
Yeah.
What do you mean? Pubes don't serve a function. Pubes aren't sexy.
To some people, they are. Well, body hair does have specific functions. Obviously, like the hair inside your nostril is, and eyelashes offer protection from the environment.
Yeah. What about eyebrows? Dust. What the fuck do they?
Eyebrows
do?
Not only do? Look good, boop boop,
but they frame the face.
They yes, I love eyebrows. I'm obsessed with eyebrows.
Weird,
but they prevent sweat from getting in your eyes. I mean, mine don't, probably because I overplucked them in the 90s. Come on now,
some sweat from getting in your eyes. Is this a real thing that evolutionarily speaking, we
maybe? But they used to be bushy. I mean, John Howard would not get a drop of sweat in his eyes. And like the hair on your head can assist in stabilizing your brain temperature.
Brain temperature. Yeah. So why do men lose their hair? That's something we should have looked up.
It's just something that happens. But your hair also can excrete toxic substances, which is why they use it in forensic medicine a lot. And if you go to a naturopath, they'll take a bit of your hair and send it off and they'll tell you exactly what's wrong with you.
What?
They can tell like how much. So if you
I need to go to a naturopath for my cysts on my head.
I don't think they're going to help with that.
But then they could study my hair and tell me why my skin on my scalp is so oily that it blocks my sebaceous glands.
I don't know. I really want to pop them.
You can't.
The evolution of body hair obviously has changed in texture, thickness and colour, and it depends on where you live in the world as to what. Have them?
Huh? Like leg hair, I'm over it.
Oh, I know, exactly. So
I don't care about my arm
where hair. You live will depend, like will determine what kind of hair texture type body hair you have as well. So
where you live, like as where in you live the environment. In the
world. Yeah, that's
or
right.
Or as in your culture.
Your culture or where the cultures were. So over time, this is how it's changed. So obviously back in Neanderthal days, I don't know what they're called, but they had a lot of body hair, right, because it had to protect them from all the weather. So in the summer, it had to protect them from the sun. In winter, it had to keep them warm.
Yeah.
They didn't wear clothes, so it was like literally they were like they were
– And the ozone layer didn't have a giant fucking hole in it.
And they probably were evolving from the ape world. Like, you know, we've evolved. And now that we're
– If you're religious, just turn this off.
Yeah, sorry, but I mean – Well, when God created ape, of course he had to create, you know. So, like, you won't find people that live in – I've written deserts of the world, but you know what I mean, the deserts of the world. They're not going to have, like, the characteristics of someone that lives in an island.
They're going to have thick hair.
They're going to have, you know, like, darker skin, thicker hair, hair that's going to protect their body from the elements, whereas in Ireland there's no sun. It rains all the time, so they've got very light colour hair. I didn't research that. It's just in my top of my head. Don't know if that's accurate. Let's move on.
I'm like, is it scientific? What's going on?
The movement of removing your hair for aesthetic purposes has been around since Cleopatra days, right? It has been around for a very, very long time.
Wow,
so they, as early
as. What about bleaching your.
Yeah, well, history states back in the 1600s that pubic hair was removed for like. Many, many reasons, right? So in the early 20th century, only female hair was found to be repulsive. Because of the patriarchy. I mean, they have useless nipples, but remove all your fucking hair. So
remove your useless nipples.
The first safety razor was developed in 1904.
Crikey.
For females.
Of course it was.
By Gillette.
A man.
Now a Gillette is the best a man can get, but it was fucking only for women
back
then.
That's interesting.
Hair removal defined class. And in the early, like, 1600s, pubic hair, and, like, pretty much right up until the early 1900s, pubic hair was often removed for, like, hygienic reasons. In the early 1900s, it was also because there was a lot of body lice around, right? So whilst this – I found this
the war.
So funny. Just, I don't know, because of hair hygiene. No one was bathing. Yeah. They didn't bathe back then. The Renaissance man, I don't know what year they were in, but they were a huge fan of the bush.
Oh.
So sex workers would shave everything, right? But then in order to cover their STIs and their – so they shaved everything because of the life. No, they would wear a merkin.
A merkin.
A merkin.
So I can't believe there's even a name for a pubic wig.
Yeah. So do you want to know where a merkin originated from?
Where?
In I think it was Japan. It was an Asian country, and it actually originated as like a they would hang it on the back of chairs so they could masturbate into it. Men could masturbate into it. Anyway, and
men are disgusting. American.
And I've written here, so they would use American to appease the bush-hungry men but also cover up any STIs they had from those unhygienic bush-hungry men. Some cultures and religions have view on removing body hair or not removing body hair. So some religions don't shave, but some religions, they it's like part of their culture to actually remove body hair.
I'm curious about Muslim women who wear the full burqa. Wonder what's going on under there.
Actually, I think shaving is – I think Muslim was one of the ones I read where they encourage it. Oh. Not their heads, though. They just cover.
That's a shame.
But in like Orthodox Jews, the women cover their hair. So when they marry, they have to wear wigs. The only people that can actually see their hair on their head are their husbands. Nobody else can see. So they wear hair coverings or they wear wigs. So one of their first parts of when they get married is to go and buy a wig from the Jewish wig maker, and they never show their real hair to anybody.
If I didn't have true respect for people who blindly, like who absolutely believe in their faith, I would think that that was fucking cracked.
Yeah.
Don't you think that the first person who ever came up with that or like if I just think that sounds – absolutely crazy.
They also,
but I fully respect when they people have, who like have really intense faith. Like I respect,
and they
that.
They're actually there's quite. I mean, there's lots of cultures and religions that I actually find very interesting.
Same,
that I would never
so
do.
Interesting. Yeah,
but like that's their belief. It's not. They don't feel pressured to do it or not do it. That's how they raise. So basically. I think body hair just comes and goes out of fashion. I mean, for a while there. I mean, I don't fucking shave anything. Who cares?
The eyebrow thing is interesting.
Do whatever you want. Yeah,
if you look at how many TV shows from the 90s and everyone's got these fine line eyebrows.
And then old Brooke Shields comes back with the old bushy eyebrow and we were back and then it was thin again and now we're back.
I think back to like Sarah Michelle Gellar and like Alyssa Milano and like these pencil fine eyebrows.
I am so glad that I did not.
I never went the super fine and I never really had anything. Much.
You've got anyway. Very like blonde eyebrows.
I do.
But I am.
So I'm quite happy I grow them out. This is them growing out.
Yeah, I like mine bushy. I like to be able to put it. I like the lamination look actually. Yeah. But
I don't mind getting a bit of henna to solid them up a bit.
Same.
Solidify them so I actually look like – whenever I come home from having my eyebrows hennaed, Michael goes, why are you so angry? Every time.
Angry
bird. What's with the angry face? Just my face.
Go and fix yours up, mate.
Yeah.
Like I love how men are like full Michael head to toe full eyebrows. Of hair. Everywhere. Hair
except
everywhere.
Our husbands don't have hair on their heads.
Yeah, well, that's fine. But, like, and then they have the balls to tell you, like, every now and again, Cam will be like, your armpits, I could pretty much plait them. And I'm like, oh, really? Where's the 1 inch of your body that doesn't have hair on it, mate? When's the last time you decided to trim
Michael
something for
never,
me?
Never, ever. The only thing I have
He's just joking.
Yeah.
And then if I do shave my armpits, he's like, oh, who shaved your armpits for? Who are you seeing today?
Not you.
Who are you doing that for? Look, I don't care about hair on anybody. If I go to the pool, like
I
in summer,
I love
have
a man
more...
with a bit of hair though.
Oh, Cam's like, I love hairy chest.
I mean, I don't love like a full carpet.
It would be weird. It would be weird if they didn't have hair.
I think Mick shaved his chest once. I was like, what the fuck is that?
Itchy. I remember Cam let me nair his back once. It was fucking torture.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
It was torture for you.
Him. Oh, I loved it.
Oh, as in you waxed it, not hair removal cream.
Nared it. That shit stings. Burns like fuck when you have a shit ton of hair.
Jesus.
And you've covered the whole back. And then you get to scrape it off with
the
scraper.
You have to wonder what's in that, don't you?
I actually no longer need to shave my legs because I have fuck all hair on them anymore now. As you get older, that falls out apparently.
I just care less.
I don't have zero care factor.
I walk out of the house now and I think, yeah, I'm really nailing this hot mess mum look.
Moccasins.
Fuck off.
Right, what's your next one? We're going to wrap this up.
My next one is the external ear.
Your pinner.
Listen to this. And I got jibbed because All of my things have functions, right? Actually, yours do too. But I'll tell you what.
Live without it.
The outer ear is no joke, Kelly. No joke. Okay? I literally went to research this, and I must have missed this bit in human biosciences about ears because I learnt a lot of words. Some of those words include
staple, your mallee,
auricle,
and your stirrup.
Auricle, which is an interesting word. Auricle. External acoustic meatus.
Yeah.
Sounds like it belongs.
I knew it was called a meatus.
I learned helix, which
helix
weirdly
is this thing here, isn't it?
No, the helix is this bit, the outer bit.
Oh, I pierced my helix and then my helix rejected it. And remember how infected it got? We popped it.
I actually had the same. Anyway, on this side. So, and then the conker.
Where's that?
I don't know.
Why didn't you look that up?
Superior crust. Yeah, anyway, I've got a diagram. Do you want to see it?
Do I?
That's not it.
Oh, there it is. Yeah.
Teach me anatomy.
Thank you. Teachmeanatomy.com.
Page not found. Oh, here we go. Page not found. It's been deleted since yesterday.
Oh, okay.
So the external ear can be divided functionally and structurally into two parts, the auricle or pinna and the external acoustic meatus, which ends at the tympanic membrane. So it's like, that's like a meaty sausagey tube.
Yes.
Yeah. Honestly, the list goes on. I don't understand the anatomical significance of all these names, but I'm sure there's someone out there that does. I just use the clock. I just go, 9 o'clock, external ear, 9 o'clock. Done. And in a nutshell, I'll tell you, the outer ear works like a funnel, right?
Yeah.
That's basically.
Captures the sound and pushes it into your tympanic membrane.
It literally directs sound down the ear and helps localize sound. The ear canal is about 24 millimeters, which is equivalent to 1 inch long. It has two bends and ends at the eardrum. The outer two-thirds of the canal is formed of cartilage and the rest is bone. The only part that's not supported by cartilage is the lobe.
The lobe,
except if you have a lobe like me, mine's attached.
Oh, mine's unattached.
I wonder what
Cam's whole ear is like, super flexible. You know how like we can sort of bend it. Cam can squish his together. His cartilage is so soft.
That's bizarre.
It's so weird.
I wonder what the evolutionary like.
What about those people that wear headphones that don't go in their ear canal, just sits on their bone out front of their ear, but they can still hear? Have you seen those?
Negative.
Haven't you seen those?
No.
So they go around the ear and
they sit there. Bluetooth wankers.
Yeah, but it doesn't go in the ear canal. You must transfer through the bone on the front of your ear
or behind
your ear.
No, it probably just points the sound in the ear hole.
Oh. I don't think.
And then so they're not noise cancelling or like so you can still hear what's going on.
I don't think it does.
Anyway.
I'm going to Google that while you carry on.
Then I asked myself, well, why can I wiggle my ears? What's the significance of being able to wiggle your ear? Right,
yeah.
Because everything else we can do seems
you
to have a function.
You say you can wiggle your ear, but I don't believe.
Watch this, ready?
Is everyone not seeing this? I don't believe. I think you're just. Okay.
Right, I'm wiggling one ear. Can't wiggle the other one. Right. So then I googled why can I wiggle my ear?
Bone conductor headphones.
Oh, I don't.
With noise cancelling.
Oh, you're off your nut.
They're bone conductor headsets.
Bone headphones.
Bone.
It
conductors.
Sounds like headphones you need for
best
sex.
Best bone conducting headphone, crystal clear sound, open ear technology, fit for glasses and hearing aids.
Oh.
It goes through the bone in your ear.
That is cooked.
They're so expensive.
Right, listen, forget about your fucking headphones. I don't care.
You don't even need your ear anymore. Oh, you got to hang it over your ear.
You got to hang it over your ear. That's the only purpose for the external ear now, just to hold your glasses up. So why can I wiggle my ear, you want to know?
Because you've got muscles.
Dogs, cats, monkeys and other animals perk their ear in the direction of sounds they are interested in. Humans and their closest ape relatives, however, appear to have lost this ability.
Yeah.
Not me.
You can't move your ear backwards. You can only move it up and down.
Some humans.
Subhumans.
Aliens like me are able to wiggle their ears, suggesting that some of the brain circuits and muscles that allow automatic ear movements towards sounds are still present. This may be a vestigial feature, an ability that's maintained even though it no longer serves
it. One ear. So long as you're on your left-hand side, right-hand side.
If I practice, I might be able to do it. Hang on. I can't do it if you look.
How am I supposed to know if you're wearing? He's a very red.
I can't do it.
You're very little.
I can
too.
Do two. I can't
little
do
little ears. Or
I can do 2 ears, and I can do my two right ears. Ear.
Okay, can I do 2 ears? You ready?
You are flexing your jaw.
Yeah. How else do you do it?
With your ear muscles, it's like your whole scalp moves. It's
I don't
like
have ear muscles.
But see my glasses. So there's, I mean, can I just say, I do not get why the outer ear has the 37 like landmarks.
Yeah, it's so pierces, nowhere to pierce.
Oh, and then I did Google, like, I want to know when piercing first started. Ear piercing practice dates back to about 5,000 years ago, and it's backed by evidence of a mummy known as Otzi the Iceman. A man who lived during the 4th millennium. It was discovered that his ears had piercings on them.
Wow.
Yep. There you go.
Yeah, well, I pierced mine in a trauma moment with my friend, and my body just rejected it. Shit.
I did my helix when I was like maybe 12, and then I went and visited my granny and pappy in Newcastle, and it got infected, and my granny made me take it out.
Oh.
And then I always like was bloody mad granny. At her for that. But it was so infected. Right.
My last one is the coccyx.
Ooh, I broke mine.
Ooh, yeah, well, that's all they're good for.
Breaking?
Mm. So
didn't actually, really break my landing.
True. The coccyx is a small triangular bone at the base of the spine. It's actually not that big triangular bone. It's a little triangular bone at the bottom of the bone you think is the coccyx.
Oh, so because the one you think is the coccyx is the sacrum, right?
Hang on, let me show you a picture so you can see what I I can show you. This is really good podcasting stuff. See, this is the bottom of the spine.
Yeah.
And then it's a little tail at the bottom.
What's this one?
That's the coccyx.
Just show me that picture. I want to see.
So it's made up of about five. So you really need to see the whole spine.
Transverse process, the base, the apex. Is that the whole thing?
So that's the spine. Then you've got like this weird bit in your pelvis, and then it's that little bit.
The tiny bit at the bottom. That looks like a butt plug.
Yeah. It's near your butt too. It's the butt plug bone. Anyway, it's made up of four or five bones that have all fused together. And basically all it does is serve as an attachment point for the pelvic and hip tendons and some muscles.
That's pretty important.
It is important. However, you don't need them. So in reality, it's just a remnant of our lost tail.
Where else would they attach to?
Just wait.
Do we actually have a tail?
We used to.
No.
But while we're developing as an embryo, at some stage during 14 and 22 weeks, we'll have a little bit of a tail, which turns into the fused coccyx. But many, many years ago when we used to walk on all fours in our evolution of like getting upright onto our legs.
Like Homer Simpson.
Yeah. Mm. We had a tail to balance us out, right?
Like kangaroos.
Yeah, exactly, because they can't hop without a tail. That is fall over. So its original function was balance and mobility to assist with that. So as we evolve into walking upright and we have two legs and our center of gravity is far more improved, we don't need it.
It's less improved. Our center of gravity is shit now.
Yeah, but we can stand upright.
Yeah.
We don't need something to balance us.
That's true.
We need our big toes, though, to help balance us. Mm. And so it obviously is useful for attaching tendons and muscles. However, some humans are still born with tails, but it's super rare. Like
the guy from Shallow Hell with his weird tail.
It's 23 recorded in history since 1884.
Shit.
Yeah.
Wonder why.
And then interesting. Yeah, right. So it is an attachment point. However, it's questionable because you can surgically remove the coccyx without any issue. So people that suffer from coccindinia, which basically is just pain in the coccyx, it's pain in the butt. Have it surgically removed is reported to have an 84% success rate of relieving the pain if nothing else has worked.
But where do you attach all of those organs and stuff?
I don't know. They don't attach it anywhere. Maybe this float around. Maybe there's just not. I don't know. I didn't look into it.
Do you know something? When I was pregnant with Lockie, I went and saw a pelvic floor physio because every time I did Kegels, my coccyx, like my tailbone, would kill.
Yeah. Because everything stretches in your pelvic stretches, and it's obviously you need like.
Maybe but I couldn't. Yeah,
it wasn't attached.
Crazy. Every time I no, but that's how it like holds it all up, isn't it?
I don't know.
And can I tell you, when you have a baby, if you've ever seen a video of a birth from the back, right? If you ever watch a video of a woman giving birth from the back, you will see the coccyx or the sacrum, and then the coccyx. Basically, like, lifts up like a trap door to let the baby's head out. And I was on the couch for 2 weeks after Ollie. My coccyx was in agony. Every night I'd have, like, an ice pack on my ass bone.
That doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, crazy. And you can actually see it lifting under the skin. Crazy.
Yeah.
But, yeah, basically just gets in the way, makes it really hard for babies' heads to get out too.
Well, that doesn't surprise me either. It literally sits right down there in the back of the pelvis.
Yeah. And that's why they say that, like, birthing on all fours and birthing on your back is really bad because the baby's got to go back to come
up.
Yeah. Oh, like an around. Yeah. Yep. Pretty much. Yeah.
How good.
Fucking useless coccyx.
They're all useless coccyx. Really, it's just all male related. Yeah. Anyway, that was pretty. I thought that was fun researching. There's lots and lots of vestigial
goosebumps body was parts. One of them. Like, yeah. Bodily functions too.
Yeah,
like
lots when your of eye twitches. Functions.
What's the fucking point of that?
Yeah.
Nothing. Yeah. Just to tell it's you to go to bed.
Muscular twitch. Some body parts might be useless. Boop boop boop. But you know what's not useless? Rating us 5 stars on the podcast platform you're listening to us
you're
on.
You're so smart.
You would be the most useful body part if you did that.
Your fingers would be really useful.
Oh, useful for fingers.
Putting
tapping
those
5 stars.
Mm. Yeah. Also, give us a follow on the socials, Instagram at Two Humorous Nurses Podcast, or find us on Facebook. Just search up. Oh, my phone.
She malfunctioned.
Also, give us a follow on the socials, Instagram at Two Humorous Nurses Podcast, or find us on Facebook. Just search up Two Humorous Nurses. Feel free to buy us a virtual coffee to support us. We don't make any money anymore because we are too busy. but we love it, and that's why we keep doing it. And we might have some exciting news coming.
We have stuff coming.
Yeah, and if you've listened to the end of this, you deserve to know first.
Yeah, but you're not going to find out now. So shoot us an email with your thoughts and feelings. hello@twohumorousnurses.com. That's humorous like the bone. HUMERUS.
Bye.
Bye.